Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around the radio. Oh, no. Yes, the radio. Or your iPhones or whatever instrument you're using to download the show, as Bob would say. Bob is not here again this episode, so Mike Catherine very kindly sitting in. Thank you,
my
sir.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And back by popular demand, Taylor Williamson.
Hi, everybody.
Oh, yeah. Taylor
Media.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
The audience loves it.
Oh, my God.
Give us your CV.
My CV. I know what that stands for again. I'm a comedian. I was on America's Got Talent, and then I lost.
And current, then, where people find your social media now?
At Taylor Comedy.
There you go.
And
Eddie Ift's doppelganger.
Is that a thing?
You look like a healthier Eddie Ift.
Healthier? Much healthier.
Yeah,
much healthier.
Really? But he's all like fit and stuff.
He is. He's Mr. Workout Guy, but he's also... And he's an animal.
I'm so flattered by this. It's a very odd thing to be flattered by, but I'm like, ooh.
It is. Eddie's, by the way, one of the nicest guys
ever. Eddie's awesome. Yeah. He and his wife, who they just had a lovely, beautiful child.
They
and,
do.
In fact, this week, I believe, is the celebration of the end of the Talkin' S podcast that he started.
Oh,
I think 500 episodes.
Wow. This
will be 500 and their final one.
No kidding.
With the bus?
No, that now they're starting the new one, which is the Bingle Bus podcast.
Where I filmed some stuff on the Bingle Bus for him. It was fun, really fun.
That's cool.
Yeah, so we'll see if that airs or whatever. Okay, well, we're going to get into a little Chris Cornell. We're going to have Fairy Abraham's biological father here, Michael. When he actually pulled me aside after one of the reunions and said, I'd like to tell more of the story of this family. And I thought, fine, we'll have you over in This Life. But right now I want to bring in Jason Zambrano. Jason, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
And,
hi, Dr. Drew.
Hey, man. Jason is the brains behind something I think is just one of our sponsors, and I just think a brilliant, brilliant idea, which is the Integrity Care Card. Tell people what that is and how you came up with that idea.
Sure. Thanks for having me on the show.
You bet.
Well, you know, I'm in recovery, like a lot of people that come on your show. And I remember when I first got into treatment, my sister, who was kind of like my mom, she wanted to help, you know, but I had proven that there was no way I could be trusted with money or gift cards or anything like that. And she said, Jay, you know, I want to help you, but I really don't want to give you the $50 that kills you. And, you know, really hit my heart. And that's where it started. You know, I have a, you know, as I got more sober, I started thinking that there's got to be a better way that we can help addicts and alcoholics that are, you know, in PHP, IOP, or going to sober living without enabling them. And I was in the merchant service business, and I started to get in the prepaid world. And I thought I'd marry the, you know, recovery aspect of it along with what my business was. So I brought a prepaid program into my office that helps addicts and alcoholics in early recovery. Parents can fund their card responsibly. You know, there's some cool blocks on it, like they can't go to liquor stores, bars, they can't get cash, no money transfers, ATM, even tattoo parlors and things like that, you know, troubled areas. So
right.
A parent can fund their card and kind of feel that they're doing the right thing and not giving them anything that they can do something bad with.
I think it's a brilliant idea.
It's an absolutely fantastic idea.
So often I'm faced with people going, we don't want to enable them. And I'm saying, yeah, but they're working hard right now, and they need this. They need food or whatever. And they're like, no.
You know, necessities.
Yeah.
And just to put the life back together. I mean, transportation or whatever it may be.
So many times I'm saying to parents, like, hey, yes, when they're in their disease, great, reject them. But they're in their recovery, and you want to support it. And this lets you sort of step in a stepwise fashion, sort of move into supporting their recovery.
Can it purchase things like Uber and Lyft and things like that? So, you know, get them to work and back?
They sure can, and they can go to meetings, absolutely.
Awesome.
Yep, they sure can. And it. You know, you guys know just as well as I do, if somebody has the obsession come on them and you want to really go out and use, I mean, you know, this isn't an end-all product. What it gives is like a cognitive break. You know, if it's difficult for them to go do what they really want to do, maybe they'll make a better choice, you know, call their sponsor, call their treatment center, their halfway house manager or parent, and maybe turn something around, you know?
No, well, it's structure.
Yeah.
It's structure, which is what people need early on.
And I know for me, you know, speaking personally, I think this is a great idea because just when I got clean, and hopefully for the rest of my life by the grace of God, I was a young guy, and I was still in the window when it would be acceptable for my parents to kind of financially support me a little bit and help me get back on my feet.
Yeah.
And it was always really embarrassing and kind of denigrating for me to kind of have to do that weird dance where I'd go ask my parents for 20 bucks here, 40 bucks there. And also, I mean, I was past the age where they're just going to give me a MasterCard. You know, so it's having something to kind of bridge the gap.
The debit card
is a really legitimately such a beautiful idea because you can get away from that weird, strange dance that my dad and I had to
Listen,
do.
It occurs to me, Jason, that this is also, I don't know if you're constructing it this way, but this would be just a great thing for parents generally. You know,
oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, there's three types, right, that always come into treatment. You have the parent or loved one that says, "Listen, I am done. I want nothing to do with them anymore, and you're on your own, kid." And then you got the second type, which is, you know, "Please help my son or daughter. You guys know better than me. I just want them to get better." And then you have the third type, and which you find a lot more of that, are they want to know every single thing that's going on with their child at every point of every second of every day, right?
Oh, you've worked in recovery.
No, this is just my experience from this card.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, it works for all three.
Yeah.
You know, you can have somebody who's 45 come in and get this, and you can appease the parents at any whatever their feelings are and give them a responsible way to give.
How do you navigate around things like pot dispensaries? You know, because now that is a legal established business in this country. Is there problems in certain states where that might be, not they might meet a loophole where they can use the card there?
No, that one's actually an easy one. What the loophole is right now is, like, I live in Florida, and you can actually walk into a Publix and you can buy liquor, right? So the only software that's out there that block the actual liquor purchase is EBT. And that is a federally funded program. So although I have my foot in the door, you know, they're not so willing to give that up yet. However, like I said, it's not an end-all product. I'm sure we'll run into more you know, things that we have to overcome. But, I mean, the pot dispensaries, they're all registered. They have an MIC number, and the card will just decline.
My mom gave me a card like this that only works at Chipotle.
but the idea
I use it all the time.
But responsibly sourced food is all you can
but
buy.
But the idea of having cards that help loved ones and parents especially control or structure the way it's being allocated, I think that's tremendous.
Of course.
Tremendous. It's, to me, it's sort of technology at its best, so
goes through the whole recovery process, right? It works just like a bank account. If they want to rent a car later on, we can make that happen. They can have a savings account. They can pay bills online. Even later on, 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, the parents want to help, we can issue them a credit card to help them build credit.
Listen, one of the things we're dealing with a lot these days, particularly the millennial age, is getting them sort of life skills, you know, managing their finances and things, having a job, you know, transportation, that sort of stuff. And this is a nice I've been trying to think of a way to they're so engaged with their phone and the technology that they don't really value anything else. So this is that perfect marriage. So good for you, Jason. Well done. Thank you for sharing this with us. We really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, Jason Zambrano. Is there a website or anything you'd like people to go to off the bat if they want to read more about it or hear more about it?
Yeah, it's integritycarecard.us. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the social media. And again, it's integritycarecard.us.
Hope and we'll have a banner up my website at drdrew.com. So, all right, Jason, hope to talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Have a
great
day.
Take care.
Thanks, man.
Bye.
Yeah, we were just trying to come up with technologies that you know, help kids, you know, the millennials. There's still more to be done on that front. Somebody, I forget who I was talking to, was saying they want to have a whole program because they're just that's the world they're more attached to than the interpersonal one. So we got to get them over to the interpersonal world.
I think I'm a millennial. Should I be offended by this?
No, it's just a matter of fact.
Well, I can't take care of myself?
Take care of yourself.
What
you're totally disconnected.
You're right, though, actually. I'm disconnected and I can't take care of myself.
What defines millennial? How old do you have to be?
I think it's like 18 to 30 or something.
Roughly. Yeah, that's about right.
All right.
I think that's about right. I think the current graduating senior is about the end of it. I can tell there's a new group coming.
Well, what do they become?
They're calling them Z or something. Who knows? You know, what the hell? I
mean, you know how messed up these kids are? This is like the least of the things to be worried about, but it's interesting. My friend created some show on, like, YouTube Red, you know? So they hire these YouTuber kids who are just teenagers, like super millennials, and like to act because they want people to watch them. And they're in the, they have an elevator scene. They're supposed to act awkward, just act nervous and uncomfortable. You're in an elevator and you don't know what to do. These kids don't know how to be weirdos anymore because they're so they don't have awkward moments because they just take out their phone when they're nervous.
Yeah, right.
When they're at a party, they're not just walking around being like, "Oh God, life is hard." They take out their phone.
Yes.
So they don't feel the feelings. I mean, I feel like they're missing out on.
What do they do in this elevator? They just pick up their phone. They didn't.
Well,
know
that's
what
they
do.
Don't. The point is that they didn't even bad. They don't know how to act like. Oh.
They didn't even know what it is.
Yeah.
That's
general uncomfortableness, general suffering, you know, like you talk about.
Ordinary
it's now,
misery.
It's now blended. Taylor brings up a very good point. It's now transferred over even into just kind of sitting in your own thoughts. That doesn't exist anymore. You know, now you have a supercomputer in your pocket. Mm. They also the craziest thing about millennials is that boys don't want pussy.
Well, there's this whole thing now called...
That's the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life because I couldn't imagine being more consumed with anything than I was with getting laid at you know, 13 through 21.
It's actually not only is there because they're busy with their porn and stuff that they're not as engaged with women because they're tough, you know, it's difficult sort of how they look at it. There's now a group who are committing. It's called Going Their Own Way or something. It's got an acronym like TGOW or whatever.
Yeah.
Guys Who Go Their Own Way, I think it's called, something like that.
What does that mean, go their own way?
Like no women.
Like asexual?
No, because they see prostitutes once in a while. They just won't have relationships.
I went to a brothel last week.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
For like a thing. I don't know if that's worth talking
why
about.
Why on earth was Susan like in
yeah, why does she? Why did she know that's
did he
right?
Him?
That's, I posted a picture.
And what happened?
I filmed like a, because I'm trying desperately to have a thing to talk about besides America's Got Talent. You know, I'm very grateful in case anyone's listening.
Where was this? In the U.S.?
Yeah, and the Mustang Ranch.
Nevada?
Dennis,
yeah, I met the guy, the good guy. And
Hoff.
Dennis Hoff.
So just a fascinating like experience. Like I filmed a goofy travel show, and then they're like, hey, we're all done filming. Like, oh, surprise, we're going to brothel. And I'm like, ha, 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 ha.
Did you pick a girl?
Well, even that was weird. Every part of it was weird. I felt guilty picking a girl.
You feel like, bad for the rest of them?
Yeah, like that was weird. Like I seriously, because like, I know they're going to edit it. I was just like, who wants to do this next part of this thing?
I am the horniest, grossest guy ever. And I bent over backwards to get laid. And I had sex with way more people than I should have. And lots of girls that I wouldn't, like I genuinely didn't even want to be around them. But I just want, but I cannot imagine paying for sex. I know that may sound crazy.
Yeah,
I can't imagine.
You didn't have to. There are guys that have to.
No, that's not true. There was especially at a time when I got separated from my wife.
You didn't want to anymore.
What do you mean?
Then you were depressed.
Yeah, but I still wanted to fuck. I still beat off like crazy. but I just couldn't imagine someone having sex with me that didn't personally want to. But this, like, I have to pay you to have sex with me.
Oh, I see.
At least if I had a one night stand, I went to a bar and met a girl or something. At least I knew that at least some part of her wanted to do that.
She wasn't,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it wasn't exploited.
I could never get through break the barrier for a paid sexual service. Yeah.
But they make you feel like they want to. Like
almost makes it worse for me. Same with a strip club. That's why I don't like strip clubs.
Well, I've never been to a strip club.
Have you ever talked to them after they get out of the business? See, that's the thing. When they're in
Wait a second. Right. Let's pause.
He's never been to a strip club.
You've never been to a strip club, but you went and got a hooker.
Right.
But that's like a guy who's like, I've never smoked weed. I've done heroin all my life.
Listen, go big or go home, you know? But like, I've never, like, I'm being silly, but I'm not like doing a bit. Whatever. Yeah. But like, the ladies, like, so like she's we're filming a thing obviously, but she's doing her act or whatever I don't know how to describe it. I didn't have sex with a hooker. I don't know if I have to say that, but she made me feel so special. Like even though I knew she was like doing her job and there was cameras on, she gave me such eye contact, such validation and approval. Like I know in Japan they have these like maid bars where they don't even have sex with you, but they just. And I never understood it until I experienced.
This is how terrible we are as men.
This is right here.
I genuinely felt. Amazing.
But that's the point.
Even though I knew it was all bullshit.
I disagree, Drew. I think that we're getting through to the actual, like, nicer side of men that oftentimes doesn't get talked about. Because what Taylor's talking about is exactly what, like, rocked my world when we had that escort on Loveline. She was, like, a escort for decades, and she got out of the business. And I was like, so, I mean, you got a lot of – in L.A., you had a pretty high – she was saying that she had worked all over the country. And then in Los Angeles, she had gotten to a place where she was really expensive clientele. So I'm like, oh, these big show, you know, like studio execs and stuff and record label guy, they probably pay you to do some crazy stuff. She's like, honestly, the overwhelming majority of my clients just wanted me to hug and pretend like I cared about them. And I was like, first off, that's heartbreaking. Like, my heart hurt for them.
Yeah.
Secondly, I was like, shit, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
Like, if I could just rent affection for 45 minutes, that would be kind of like such a nice little therapeutic tool.
But you know? what I was saying was, what I was sort of quipping on about being horrible about men is that we will, the need is so great for attention from women that women can absolutely, even when we know it's pretend, we're paying for the pretend, it still is validating.
Right.
That also, to me, is a problem.
We're so shallow in the opposite direction that a beautiful woman that we find attractive can literally chop our leg off with a chainsaw. But if she just grazes your dick, you're like, oh, it's all worth it. Worth it. Oh, yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing. Maybe I should say more. It's less what's awful about us, but what's weakest about us. Is that the right word? Or sort of more vulnerable about us or something?
I've always said that. It was even since I was a little boy, I never understood how people were like, you know, women, they just can't be good leaders. That's why they'll never be a woman president. I was like, women are way better off as leader in leadership positions, and guys are so irrational and impulsive because we are the hunter. I mean, say what you want. Sure, yeah, there's the, you know, Amanda Nunes of the UFC of the world, but that's 0.001%. When it comes to people that like get giddy around violence and aggression, it's men.
Yeah.
And that makes us way more impulsive,
yeah,
and way less able to control our emotions. I never understood, even like I said, even since I was a little kid, I was always like, I'd much rather trust my money, my like life with a woman than a dude. You know, I mean, unless I was in a foxhole.
Louis C.K. has this bit about this thing about being a man, like, I don't, whatever the bit was, he wanted to buy something, like a violin, I don't know, whatever. He wanted to buy something, but then he just jerked off. Then he's like, I didn't want to do that. But it's such a real thing. And I'm sure that translates to being president and going, like, I'm going to go war. And it's just like, just jerk
beat
off. And
beat thing. Off and rethink it. But that's everything you do in your life.
But no joke, that should be taught in school, though.
Beat off and rethink it.
It's literally like a
B-A-T-I. That's our new...
It's amazing the choices that one has made in life, including myself anyone else.
If I wasn't such a compulsive masturbator, I'd have so many Lamborghinis.
All right, so we have Michael on the phone?
Yeah, so we have Michael Abraham on the phone.
Michael, you there?
Yes, I am.
I'm doing well. Thank you for joining us. So Michael Abraham is Farrah Abraham's biological father. You've seen him on the Teen Mom series. He shows up not infrequently. And Michael has become sort of the voice of reason, right?
Yeah, that's what it seems like sometimes.
and you have done a lot of sort of interpersonal work both with Farrah and I think your ex-wife too. Again, I've not seen those other things you've been on. I'm not sure the extent of what you guys have been doing in terms of therapeutically, but it seems like something important has been happening. I've noticed Farrah calls you dad and treats you very differently. There's a real affection there now. What I want to do, I take a little break, and then I want you to tell us the whole story, okay?
Okay, this sounds great.
We are proud to welcome a great new sponsor, Integrity Care Card. This is a service that was started by a recovering addict who actually was a patient of Bob's at one time. Integrity Care Card. It's a refillable debit card that lets you provide financial support to someone you love without the risk of misuse. It's a great idea. That's how it works. Simply sign up. You deposit the funds onto the card, share it through your Integrity Care Card account. You can keep track of the spending habits and receive real-time spending alerts and block purchases from places like liquor stores, casinos, ATMs. People in recovery often need help making responsible choices with their money. So the Integrity Care Card is a fantastic way to offer support without denying them the independence they deserve. It's a great parenting technique. Come on now. It's better than cash. Better than gift cards, this is a true debit card that can make a real difference in someone's life. I love this idea. So if you or someone you know is supporting a loved one in recovery or trying to structure your financial relationship with, say, a child or something, check out Integrity Care Card. Visit integritycarecard.us. Click the banner on doctor.com or call 888-216-4680, 888-216-4680. Or integritycarecard.us. It's a great idea. Okay, we're back. We're talking to Michael Abraham, Taylor Williamson, our guest, Mike Cathwood sitting in for Bob Forrest. And Mike, I want to give you the floor. And you approached me after one of the reunions and said you wanted to tell more about your family and what people didn't understand. And of course, with the way television is, there's no time to get into anything. But podcasting is where we can do it. So I will give you the floor.
Okay. Well, you know, we saw each other last weekend, you know, filming a reunion. And again, we always have fast challenges. We're moving too fast. There's always things that come up. That's why I contacted you. But on the positive side, you know, since last October, we had an opportunity to do the WeTV show, Marriage Bootcamp, Reality Stars Family Edition, first time it was done. And since then, speaking for myself and Farrah, our relationship has really taken off in a positive way. I mean, I've always been involved with Farrah's life and Sophia's life. But like you mentioned, yes, Farrah calls me dad and father now. So I think we both have, you know, are focused on continued consulting, you know, excuse me, getting some professional help to help us communicate. And that particular TV show really, I mean, we both took it seriously. And I think we're starting to benefit from it.
Yeah, I noticed it. I could see it. I wasn't sure where it was coming from, and it's good to hear. Now, you want to talk about – where do you want to go? Because I want to give you the sort of control here of how you wanted to present what it is you felt you had some stuff you wanted to discuss that maybe the public didn't understand, and I want to give you a chance to do that. So have at it.
Yeah, and I'll try to do that. I mean, you know, just so you know, we start shooting another season of Teen Mom. You know, we're at it again. So I don't want to give away too much, but, you know, like last week, you know, we had a couple stumbles, you know, Farrah went out and spoke with you and, you know, it didn't work out too well. And I don't think it was really, Farrah or yourself. I mean, the biggest challenge that we have doing reality TV, and I know you work with a lot of people in this industry, is that we have our lives. Then we are filming, and then we're 6 months in arrears, and these issues, most of the issues that we're, you know, involved in are very, you know, they're negative, and they hold you down. And, you know, there were, you know, a couple topics, Simon for one, Deborah's fiance, you know, for Farrah, and again, we didn't get to talk about this too much, Farrah's put them aside, you know, and she's moving on. Some people may not like that, but that's what she's doing to keep, to keep healthy and positive for just not herself, but also Sophia, which is a big concern for all of us. So, you know, we really didn't get to talk about that too much. And again, I, you know, appreciate your professionalism, you know, trying to work with her on that.
You know, again, it's television. We're just trying to get information. We're trying to, you know, we're doing a talk show is what we're doing, really. But I'm sort of using my professional instincts to sort of guide what's happening there, and I got all that from her. And I, you know, I one thing I did question was, you know, I know Deborah is deeply hurt by that, by Sarah Farrah's mom, and that I was sort of questioning, wouldn't Sophia, you know, isn't it a deficit for Sophia that she doesn't get to see her grandmother, and how does she feel? I didn't really have I wasn't trying to guide her one way or another. I just was sort of questioning that, and. And
I mean, that's a big concern, you know, for all of us. But, you know, most people, especially through the last couple seasons, I mean, Deborah is being filmed a lot. I mean, the fact of the matter is, Farrah and I and Sophia, we've been living in Austin. Well, I'm on my sixth year. Farrah and Sophia, they're on their fifth year, even though they're almost in L.A. right now, you know, to have a home. And Deborah still lives in Omaha. You know, Farrah seems to have made some decisions. I mean, you know, without giving away the last two episodes of our WeTV show, she had to make some decisions on what will be the best way to run her life and her daughter's life so they can have a real healthy environment, which is something that Farrah did not have.
So you had also mentioned to me that you wanted to talk a little bit about the sort of history of the Abraham family or something? Was there grandparents? Was there something there you wanted to talk about? I imagined as you approached me that we were discussing the intergenerational transmission of trauma or something of that sort.
I mean, to give you an example, and again, Deborah's not here to defend herself, but I'm not really going to – I don't hold back anymore. Give you an example on holding back. I've been writing a book for probably about the last 8 years. I've ripped it up twice because I want to protect people that I know, and I'm not doing that anymore. Deborah, you know, we were both, you know, brought up, you know, we're baby boomers, we're Christians. You know, Deborah is a very tenacious woman, just like Farrah is. I mean, Farrah's, you know, she got a lot of personality traits just like her parents. You know, we're business minded. But again, you know, there was like maybe one or two reunion shows. I think you asked me, well, Michael, what happened to your marriage? And before I could get it out of my mouth, Deborah took the opportunity to say that it was infidelity. And yes, there was infidelity, but there was a lot of toxicity. And, you know, getting back to the, you know, our Abraham family, I mean, Deborah and I, we had a very, you know, toxic relationship. We were together for almost 27 years. Wow. And unfortunately, Farrah and her half-sister had to live through all that. And hopefully Farrah can break that cycle for Sophia's sake. And right now, currently, I don't believe that Deborah's in Farrah and Sophia's life for those things.
How did you and Deborah meet in the first place?
Believe it or not, we both worked for AT&T. And gosh, it goes back almost, 30 years. And we were both were picked to go into corporate marketing, and that's how we met and had a long-distance relationship. She lived in Omaha. I lived in Phoenix. And we were both married before, and we had a long-distance relationship, and the rest is history. We got married and had Farrah.
And then you guys stayed married how long?
Probably just about 27 years.
Wow. And was it was there a good quality of the relationship at one point?
Well, I would say yes. I mean, we were both driven, just like Farrah is, and we were business-minded people. But as things progress, I mean, I basically lived Deborah's life. You know, I mean, I moved to Omaha. I passed up promotions. I mean, Deborah was a good wife. But again, we never sought help. I mean, there was discussion about my infidelity. I mean, Deborah had her shortcomings too. And in Farrah's first book, you know, My Teenage Dream Ended, she has a chapter in there. She talks about how she wished her parents would have just got divorced. Yeah. Deborah would kick me out. She'd ask me back. You know, I'd leave. Deborah asked me back. Yeah. This is like after we got divorced here about seven, 8 years ago. She tried to get back with me twice. And I, you know, we tried. And finally, I says, this is not going to happen.
What was your family of origin like?
My family, I'm second generation here in the U.S. I'm half Syrian and half Italian.
And what was that like? What were those? What were your parents' relationship like?
My relationship?
No, your parents' relationship between themselves.
My dad's kind of passive like I am, and my mother was pretty strong. And I picked up a lot of traits from my dad. You know, I mean, I'm not putting my dad down because I love him dearly. Very strong Catholic upbringing.
Was there any domestic violence in that, or domestic, you know?
Not that I remember. I will share something with you that I thought they would show on Wii, but I disclosed it for the first time to Farrah, that I was molested at one time by a family member, and my family never knew about that, but I'm public with that now.
Who was the perpetrator on that?
I'll just say it was a family member.
Okay.
Not like an uncle or aunt.
I guess what I was wondering was, did you have to live with that perpetrator then after that?
Till the person died.
Wow.
We still visited and everything, and I never told my parents.
My goodness. I'm so sorry. Mike, you went through something.
I did, but I certainly didn't have to interact with that person much.
Can you imagine that?
No.
Yeah,
and it wasn't a person I trusted or look up to in any way.
It makes it extra super painful. Yeah. So, my goodness, my friend, that's pretty heavy. Was it an ongoing thing or just a one-time deal?
What I could remember was maybe two or three times. I was right around 5 or 6 years old.
Oh, my goodness. Did,
even though it's been years and you've probably done what you whatever you could to get past it, was it at all therapeutic and helpful to then come forward and admit it at this point for the Wii Show?
It was. I mean, I I was honest with my, I go to counseling, and probably mid last year, the person says, Mike, it's past, the person's dead, you're still carrying this thing. And so when we did the Wheat TV show, we did an exercise, and they just aired this past Friday, how we pick traits and how these negative traits, are mutually shared, like between me and Deborah, and then they're passed on to Farah. And I took that opportunity to share that at that time with my daughter, and she comforted me, believe it or not.
I can see that. That makes sense. That may be where you guys are connected right now, because she sees you more as a, you as a person, who suffered with stuff too. How about Deborah's family of origin? What was that like?
They big on being perfectionists. Her mother is extremely strong. Her father was strong. He's Danish, and she was Italian. No BS. They were drivers, and it seemed like they were very, very loving to me, but they would drive a child, and Deborah's always been driven to perfection. I don't know if you see that in her, but she tries to be, right on spot, boom, boom, boom. And her father has passed away. Her mother's still alive.
And siblings? Were there any brothers and sisters for Deborah?
She had a younger brother.
Had.
Yeah. Excuse me. She has a younger brother. Yeah, about four years younger than Deborah.
Is he the same way?
Yeah. Same way.
I have a question, and I can only imagine it's just incredibly difficult to do. But I just wonder how you can get by dealing with having a daughter who is in the spotlight and is in the spotlight taking so much negative information, and then you're probably exposed to so much of the criticism that is disproportionate. I mean, I understand everyone on TV deserves you're a fan or not, but the things that get thrown at all those teen mom girls, especially Farah, are so vicious and so brutal. How do you as a father maintain your sanity when you know that stuff's out
there? And let me just add to that too. And by the way, I was with Michael through a lot of this stuff. It was painful for him, believe me.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. These girls came into their sort of public awareness as social media developed.
Right.
They were case 1, 2, 3, and 4 for what goes on in the social media. So it's funny when Michael's talking about this thing we did a week or so ago, when I was talking to them about, I talked to them about Kathy Griffin because I was curious how they would experience that. And they're like, oh yeah, I'm a shit like that all the time. You just duck. It's like, you just move on. You don't go after it.
Keep on trucking.
They're so accustomed to it. It used to bother them.
In the beginning, and again, Dr. Drew's seeing me cry a lot. Okay. I'm a very emotional person. I feel my, Dr. Drew, you and I, we talked about this on set sometimes, that I feel what my daughter feels, both mentally and physically. It's a weird trait that I have. Yeah. And, with the social media, both Deborah and Farah helped coach me through it because I'm not a big guy, but I've got a little redneck in me. And you can just imagine. People sending me pictures, videos. Oh. It's my only child. It's my daughter. Oh. But I kept my sanity. Didn't get crazy. I tried to get a few of the guys to come down here to Texas and see me face to face. But that's not, usually haters. Haters hide behind social media, and it's going to be that way. But most of the time, if it's really bad, I just tell them I pray for them and go from there.
I'm delighted to hear that Deborah was part of what got you through that. I mean, that's nice to hear that she was able to help you with that.
Yeah, well, they would, they'd call me and they go, Michael, why are you debating with these people? Because I'd be on Facebook, 6 hours of the day just trying to change these people's minds. But, it's not worth it. They're going to be that way. We talked, it's part of Voin. I'm involved with some mentoring programs here in Austin, just not on a business side, but anti-Voin programs. I got another one that I'm kicking off in Houston with a partner of mine. And you know what? The questions you just asked is what they ask. How do you deal with it? And again, you basically have to put what is important. That's your life, not theirs. You know, there will always be haters out there.
Yeah, it's what we talked with you, Taylor, about the mob. You know, the social. We were talking about Kathy Griffin last time you were on about
how
just attacks people. It's you probably don't get any of that.
I get I mean I don't get like that level, but I for someone who tries not to be controversial, I get people writing to me just to be mean.
It's so bizarre.
And like
what motivates somebody to go do that?
Well, that's what fascinates me. I don't get hurt by like my feelings are hurt, yeah. But I'm fascinated and sad that you will go out of your way to say mean, nasty things. Like I had and then on Facebook, most of my hate, it's not anonymous. Like you hide right on your keyboards what to do. But most of my hate's on Facebook. Here's my face. Here's what I do for a living. Here's my job. Like,
it's still such a layer back from actually interpersonal contact. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's still, and who knows if that's really them even. You know what I mean? It could be a fake account. But Michael, we're gonna kind of wrap things up. I want to make sure you get a chance to say everything you intended to say. Are we there yet, or you got more you want to say before I let you go?
Well, you know, the big thing is if I could share this, you know, with your viewers, you know, our lives were put out there. You know, I mean, the reason why Farrah and Deborah and I did this was for education. Hey, Farrah made a mistake. She got pregnant. You know, the statistics are out there, Dr. Drew. You know, our actions through the TV show hopefully have helped reduce teen pregnancy.
Yep.
Hopefully some of our actions now may be able to help, you know, minimize bullying, on the web. Farrah is an entrepreneur. She is driven. I think you know that I'm very proud of her. Yes, she gives me a pain in my butt sometimes, you know. You know, the other thing is you know, and you didn't ask the question, you know, why doesn't Farrah get along with the other girls? She just, you know, I think they all have kind of chewed on each other. Yes, the adult video thing, when it did come up, it probably stirred things up. And I'm not beating up on Macy or any of them. But you know, with social media and then when we're all written about, you know, in the trade rags and the websites, it's hard to really scale what's real. Unfortunately, we all have emotions, and you know, Farrah goes off on people, Amber goes off on people, blah blah blah. You know, speaking for myself, I wish those three women and all the gals on Teen Mom too. Also, I want them to be healthy and to prosper, and that's, you know, I hope that happens for them, and because we're going to continue to live our life, and we hope they live their lives positively also.
Well, I kind of look forward to a time when everyone gets back together again. I kind of keep hoping for that, and I think it'll come. But, you know, in the meantime, you guys are managing, and it's sort of working itself out. And I've heard similar, what you just expressed, feelings from the other three girls individually about Farrah and your family, which, like, they don't want to be interacting right now. They just hope for the best, but they feel like they'll conflict if they get together, and so good, stay separate. That's fine with me.
Yeah,
it's not a bad strategy. All right, Michael, is there anything else, any place you'd like people to go, a website or anything, if they have any more questions or want to interact with you at all? Go ahead.
Not right now. I mean, if anybody want to get in touch with me, they can go to my Facebook or my LinkedIn account. My phone number's there and my email's there. I'm an open book.
All right.
I have a lot of people contact me, good or bad. And I feel, you know, I need to do that for our viewers and people out there. Maybe I can help them.
All right, my friend. Excellent. Yeah. And I'll see you probably when we get together in 6 months or whatever the next time we get together is.
Yep. Or if I'm in LA, I'll hunt you down.
All right. Good deal. Talk to you soon. All right,
thanks for the opportunity.
You bet. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, dude.
Thanks, Michael.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Is it overwhelming for you? Because you're so caring and you make yourself available for so many people who need help. Every guest you have,
I make it clear that I'm not your doctor. I have some specialized judgment on these things, and I can kind of help you figure out what's going on and then refer you.
Yeah.
So I end up being sort of like assessment or referral kind of thing. Take a little break. Be right back. Do not go to a physician's office. Do not go to the emergency room. Do not go to urgent care, because you don't have to pay for all that infrastructure, all that personnel. You don't have to expose yourself to sick people. You don't have to wait. You don't have to leave your house. That is why I'm on the HEAL Advisory Board. This is the future of medicine. It is $99 all in. And if you have insurance, most insurances, it's just your copay. And you get a board-certified, carefully selected. These are hand-selected physicians by Renee Dua, the nephrologist that runs this program. And she selects every physician. And listen, go read the reviews. People are overjoyed by the care they get. These are high-quality professionals. And that's what you want. You want somebody who knows what they're doing, spending their time focusing on you. That's what you want. You want a well-trained professional just focusing on you. You don't want to pay for all the other personnel. You don't need it. You don't need it. Now with HEAL, you just go to HEAL, you get the app, or you can get a physician right now. They'll be there. They're guaranteed within 2 hours. And again, $99 all in if you don't have insurance. And if you do, it's usually just your copay with most insurances. HEAL is the future of medicine. This kind of efficiency. Forget the bureaucracy. Forget pre-clearance. Forget everything. Just go get the app. HEAL.com is where you get the app. Get HEAL before you need it. All right, we're back. Bob Forrest joins us from an aircraft. Bob, explain this to us.
I am in the air. I'm in the air over, where are we? Great Bend, Indiana.
Wow. And you're going to go see a Penguins game?
Yeah, going to see if they can win the Stanley Cup tonight.
Well, congratulations.
In Nashville? Good time.
I'm going to Nashville right now. Yeah, the game's in a couple hours.
Hell yeah. Look at Bob Jet Setter.
I know, right? It's pretty cool.
Hockey. I'm thinking of Anderson back home at the old.
Oh, man, poor Anderson.
I was texting with him.
Oh, he probably is the most jealous man on earth right now. This is our former engineer from Loveline.
Huge, huge Penguins fan.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Anderson's a huge Penguins fan.
We're going to get into a little Chris Cornell here with Bob, you think? Bob, any?
It's about time to talk about it. I did talk about it a couple days after. It didn't seem to make any sense what you were hearing.
Right.
Now it all kind of comes together as a puzzle.
How do you understand it?
I understand that you do crazy things when you mix a bunch of drugs together.
That's
crazy,
right.
Illogical. Unreasonable things that you wouldn't normally do in your right mind.
Especially when you're a drug addict. I mean, again, Tiger Woods was...
Ativan in particular makes you do crazy stuff. Remember, I think Patrick Kennedy tried to go vote on Congress at 2 o'clock in the morning.
That's right. That's exactly,
you know, but who mean? Amongst us hasn't it tried that at least once?
Crazy thing.
Yeah, and in some people who are prone to depression, it can cause acute depressive symptoms too. Acute.
Yeah, and you can do a sudden and dramatic, silly, dumb, terrible, ugly things as a result of benzodiazepine, a drug that America thinks is harmless.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's right. And how long have I been preaching about that?
I mean, is that the take you have?
100%.
You and I have really talked about it too much. That's what it was. And people think, oh, that can't be what it was. I said, you ever taken Ativan or Xanax and drank a couple of beers? You're wasted. You do crazy things.
Yeah.
But I did not know.
Not that I would know from personal experience.
Bob, it's Mike Catherwood. I did not know Chris Cornell personally, but I did know him through the connection of recovery. And from what I knew, for quite some time, he was pretty squared away. Obviously, we don't want to speculate too much.
Solid.
Yeah, solid. Like you said, I mean, he was
solid,
known.
Solid.
And helping out with the rock care, music carers community. I mean, he was there. He was in it. I don't want to speculate too much on a man who's passed, but he seems like the type of guy who would know better. And I don't want to talk poorly.
But I've been telling Bob, I'll let Bob speak for himself, but I've been saying forever, when a doctor says to you, you need to take this, man, and you're a drug addict, your brain goes, oh, yeah, I need to take that. I need to listen to this guy. Right?
Yeah. Immediately when I started putting the whole puzzle together as more stuff came in, it reminded me of AM, because DJ AM had good reason to be taking all these drugs he was taking. He was in a horrible plane crash, and he had PTSD and all this kind of stuff. So you you as a sober addict walk into a psychiatrist's office, you're playing Russian roulette.
Yeah,
that's how I feel about it.
It's funny, Bob. Absolutely, beware the medical system if you're a sober addict, because it can threaten your life.
Well, you don't have that luxury. Then here's how I explain it to my friends, and a bunch of my friends and I have been talking about, because Chris was such a part of our sober community at Music Cares, and he was Man of the Year in 2007 at a nonprofit that I'm on the board of, and he's just a solid dude. And then to have this happen inside your solid dude world, it's earth shattering to everyone. And I'm the one saying, we don't have the luxury to go into doctors' offices and listen to them.
Yeah, we
gave up that luxury in the 1980s.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. And AM is, again, the exact example of that, that he was listening even when the sober community was saying, dude, there's a problem here. I did Tom Arnold's podcast, and he is coming public about his severe benzodiazepine addiction that came out of nowhere. And finally, some people intervened and pulled him aside and said, dude, you got to go and get off the set.
Please tell me it was Schwarzenegger that intervened.
No. Damn.
You have to stop,
but
Tom.
Tom Arnold is another guy who knows better. He's almost died twice because of doctors and opiates.
Well, what about the one I'll go back to, Drew, is Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same story repeatedly of people that are sober many, many years, sometimes decades, and they go into a doctor's office and everybody thinks benzos are harmless, and the next thing you know, chaos ensues.
Well, benzos and then the psychostimulants. That's going to be first it's the opiates, then it's the benzos, and then it's the stimulants like Adderall. And those are the three. That's the triumvirate.
Well, you have to be able to focus, Drew. Come on. You don't want people to be all scatterbrained, do you?
And we just don't understand. My profession doesn't understand this disease. They don't understand when an addict comes back and goes, oh, my God, you're the best doctor ever. I haven't felt this good in a long time. And you might as well have given them methamphetamine, because that's the reaction you're getting.
Well, if you insist.
Right, exactly. Yeah. They'd be even happier.
Yeah.
So I don't know what we do about this, Bob.
What about that old Dow Chemical? Was it Dow Chemical in the 60s that came up with the slogan, better living through chemistry?
I think it was Monsanto. I think it might have been Monsanto.
I think it was Marilyn Manson.
We are now an example of a society that believes in that slogan, better living through chemistry. Chemicals that everybody has to take every day in order to be normal.
And not only that, we have this very strange situation now where people love pills and hate drug companies. It's so bizarre. Yeah. It's so bizarre. It's like, hey, if you want to hate something, hate the pills. Yeah. So why don't you start there and then bring in the drug companies?
Why is this a debate? Why is this an issue that's not across the board? Like, you're the only doctor I hear speaking out.
Talking about the opiates for 15 years, and now you're starting to hear it. It takes a long time for a consensus to develop. It's crazy.
I also think, and I was thinking about this the other night, totally unrelated to this conversation, it's going to end up being like AIDS, where there was a handful of doctors in 1986 that had patients die in their hands because they were infected with AIDS. It took a decade for all the doctors in America to have that experience, for everyone to go, what is this?
That's right.
And, you know, Dr. Drew and, you know, I'm certain addiction medicine specialists have probably been watching the disease destroy people for years.
Yep.
And eventually, when every single small town USA has that experience, it's just going to come to the conclusion that, you know.
And then the professional standards are going to change. Then the training of new physicians is going to change. It just takes forever. I remember I was on Anderson Cooper. He did a special on opiates about 2 or 3 months ago. Maybe 6 months ago now. And, lost Bob, but that's okay. He's on an aircraft somewhere. This woman came on, she goes, I'm an ER doctor, and she went on to chronicle how terrible it is. She goes, but for years, I thought that was the right thing to do. I go, you're sitting there telling me that you've killed.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you back. But she's sitting there saying, I have killed. She doesn't understand even what she's saying when she says, I used to do that. I used to believe that's the right thing to do. That's saying, I used to fire weapons into playgrounds or whatever. It's like, no.
My grandpa used to shoot guns in the air to celebrate New Year's Eve.
Right.
Does that make it okay?
I can't believe you're saying that. You say it with such like, once we thought this was the way to go. It's like, no, you should be like contrite and you should be like mortified and you should be like trying to get the word out. I mean, oh my God. They should be apologizing to people like me and drug addicts who suffered at the hands of it, apologizing on your knees. God.
But I do think that there is a legitimate gripe to say, like, I was being altruistic. I thought purely medically sound. This was sound.
It was what they, listen, yeah. They thought. But the point is, they vilified me. They diminished right. addicts. And it was like, hey, man, this is the pain is what the patient says it is, man. And it's the fifth vital sign. It's as important as your pulse or your blood pressure. And until you get it squared, you're abusing the patient. Remember it's, that, Bob?
What we're doing right now with that.
Can I? Yeah. You know, the pain scale is something that has always fascinated me. So I broke my back in the 80s, and I'm old, and I didn't plan on living this long. So honestly, on a good day, I'm a 5. On a bad day, I'm a 7. I don't need to go to some doctor and give me something. That's just the way the cards played out.
Well, I know from self-medicating.
You just seem like a Nazi. When you say things like that, you get this comparison. Your pain isn't the same as my pain. No, you have no idea what it's like for me on a cold morning to even get up and get going.
Yeah.
But the alternative to take opiates to kill my life and kill my soul and kill my mind and kill my spirit, F that.
Yeah.
Well, and yep. I also yep. think, like, there's just no possibility that it's going to get better.
No, it's getting better. It's getting better.
No. An opiate based. let's say you got a bum knee because you fell off a ladder.
Yeah.
Taking morphine or taking Percocet for years, that's not going to help your situation.
No, that's
there's
the
just
point.
No possibility.
That's the point. It's going to make it worse.
Yeah.
And you're going to kill the soul and everything else in the meantime. So it's not that we're withholding medicine that could help people. We're saying, I know it feels good right now. I know your brain thinks it's the right thing. It's what's causing all this problem.
Yeah.
And I know you can't see it because you're in it. We have to get you off so you can resume functioning again, so you can resume humanity.
I was not alive because I'm not old like you and Dr. Juba. but I was not alive in the 70s and late 60s. But, you know, when I watch Easy Rider or something, you get the sense that what we're dealing with pills now is exactly what we were dealing with like shrooms and hallucinogens and weed in the 60s, in that everyone's like, you kids are throwing your life away with that. And then the dad says that as he washes back his thoughts and his feelings with whiskey. It's like, the pharmaceutical companies are they're destroying America, and who needs to drink and use drugs to keep their life together? Let me go take my pill because I have pain in my – I have fibromyalgia.
Yeah, my doctor says I need this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like there's – it's just – we're shifting the goalposts, but it's the
weird.
Same game.
It's very strange.
There's a reason for that, though, and there are only really, truly a couple of what I believe to be, you know, just severely – money-oriented pharmacy, big pharmas, and yet the other ones who are doing good, who are changing people's lives and bringing about Harvoni that's going to save 3 million people's lives, they don't distance themselves from other drug companies that are truly just remarketing and repackaging benzos and opiates with no research and development. They just keep pumping it out. There's one in particular called Purdue Laboratory. They're the ones that created OxyContin. Drew, is OxyContin really much different than the drugs that existed before it?
For cancer patients, they were a significant step forward, yeah. Yeah, it really was. It was quite a bit different, in fact.
Yeah, but for cancer patients.
Used it. It was used in the pain management clinics for millions of Americans.
Well, that's different.
Right.
That I can't – how the whole – where it went is insane.
If you have esophageal cancer and you got about 6 months of horror to live with –
that's right.
Go ahead and give the guy or that's gal right. all the Percocet and
Oxycontin
they want. If you have arthritis, stay away from the opiate-based painkillers. You know,
that's
like
right.
those were designed for guys in World War I who took a bayonet to their thigh. It's not exactly something you should just be flippantly putting in your body.
All right, Bob, we're going to let you go enjoy the penguins.
It's going to change. It's going to change, but Chris will be missed for a long time to come. I think this is one death that's going to reverberate in the sober community for a long time.
Again, in terms of we're discussing him again because the toxicology came out, and they did, in fact, find about 4 milligrams of Ativan. They also found Furanol in his system, which is a headache medicine that you would never give to a drug addict. Don't even use it anymore, frankly. But the fact that somebody gave him Furanol, again, just infuriates me. Just more evidence of, you know, somebody giving him something they had no business being exposed to. So it just makes me sad for Chris. And I hope people get the real message of what went on here. So, all right, man. Have a nice time at the game.
Go Penguins.
All right. Bye. Later, dude.
Bye, Bob. You're awesome, man.
So sad now.
Go Penguins. Everyone here is a Nashville fan. My sons are, because he went to Vanderbilt.
Nashville.
He's big in the Predators. But let's take a little break. Come back with some calls. Now, one of the most amazing parts of working in treatment is seeing a number of former patients successfully move on and choose to become mental health professionals themselves. Yes, I've seen it. And the field of psychology is vast, and the need for competent practitioners has not been greater and never been greater. If you're considering this rewarding career, I suggest you look at the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant University. I've been familiar with Alliant for some time now. I've spoken at their events. It was founded in 1969, boasts an alumni network of nearly 50,000 people worldwide. Alliant has fostered many of today's mental health pioneers, authors, and advocates. CSPP at Alliant University hosts both on-ground and online programs in business psychology, marriage and family therapy, clinical counseling. They also offer an APA-accredited doctoral program in clinical psychology that allows for specialization in child psychology, clinical forensic psychology, and integrated psychology. Faculty is industry leaders. Former faculty includes names like Abraham Maslow, Carl Rogers, Viktor Frankl. Come on now. Those are names everyone's heard, some of the fathers of modern psychology. For more information on the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant, check the Alliant banner on my site or visit Alliant, Alliant.edu. That is Alliant.edu. Hi, Kimberly.
Hey, Dr. Drew, I've been watching you since back on VH1, and when I've seen you on CNN, and when I saw this, I have a huge problem, and I'm hoping you can point me in the right direction.
All right, let's get into it. What's going on?
I've been in a 10-year cycle with my husband, who started taking my pills right after I had my first heart attack and was stealing all my pain meds, and he's been in rehab and rehab and rehab, and then it went to... I kicked him out, and it went to him getting into a hotel and banging meth. And he got clean, and we just moved to Florida because my mom was put in a nursing home and everything. And I didn't know he was using. I thought, because my pills weren't missing, I thought everything was good. Then come March, he passes out, and I call 911. They come and get him. And he comes home and said it's something with his kidneys because of his diabetes. And then April, he just falls out right in front of me, and I'm doing CPR. And I mean, I have all these issues. I'm not even gonna lift more than 10 pounds. But here I'm pulling the grown man out of a corner and doing CPR for 10, 15 minutes. They had to Narcan him twice, and it was heroin. And so during all this, I did what you're supposed to do in Florida. I went to court to file a Marchman Act, and they approved the first petition within 3 hours.
What is the Marchman Act? What is that in Florida, the Marchman Act?
The Marchman Act is when you're going to, someone has a drug problem, and the first part is to hold them into a rehab situation and put them in the detox, and then they will go ahead and you see the judge. So it's pretty much like a court-ordered rehab type of deal.
Right, great.
So I had to go twice to do the first and second part of Marchman. And then when we went to court, he conveniently went from rehab into the hospital because his potassium was high. And I was like, well, how many bananas did he eat? So then the day before Mother's Day, he comes home. They send him home because we still have to go to court for Marchman. So that Wednesday, we went to court, and the judge ordered long-term treatment.
Cool.
But he's a vet, and so instead of putting him under this Marchman Act where he would have to do, like, drug court and color code and all that stuff, they didn't want to do that. They were just handing him over to the VA, and we'll let the VA go ahead and handle this.
Oh, boy.
Well, I've had to have the cops out here. He gave my car away for drugs, and then my car comes back with all the stolen stuff from JCPenney.
Oh, my God.
With the ink tag still on it. My car smells like weed, you know. And then so I had to have the police come out and try to find my car. And then my family was away for the week. And a week ago, Thursday, he got paid on the 1st. And from Mother's Day until then, he was fine. Then come Wednesday evening, he's starting to do that nod. You know what I'm talking about. You know,
yeah.
The heck. And then Thursday, we couldn't wake happened again, and Friday happened again, and even my 20-year-old son, who's a huge boy, we couldn't get him to wake up, so we called 911. They came out here with the police because they have to, you know, go ahead and, you know, make a, since he's on the March Mac, make a report. But he refused treatment, so they wouldn't do anything. And when I said to the police, well, what about this March Mac? He's not supposed to be doing drugs. And, you know, well, it's not illegal to be high in your house. That's what I was told. We can't arrest them because it's not illegal to be stoned. It's illegal to possess.
Right. It's illegal, like, illegal to use. It's not illegal to be under the influence if you're not doing anything.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. So then they came out three more times, Saturday and Sunday. Saturday,
Jesus,
it was so bad that he had fallen over and, you know, hit his head. We have all tile. And
okay.
And
all right. So I'm going to stop you because, I mean, it's mm-hmm. more of the same, right? And so, yeah. Mike, you tell me if you agree with me on this. I mean, okay. This is, you know, hardcore polydrug, primary opiate addiction, mm-hmm. with criminality fully blossomed, right?
And I told the police, he's going to die or I'm going to die from stress. And,
well,
and when they left on Sunday,
yeah,
they said, you know, just call us if you have a problem. So 4 o'clock in the morning into Monday, I hear screaming and he fell, passed out. So finally I got, because Saturday night he had broken all the stuff and was walking around getting, you know, he didn't even know he was bleeding. When I woke up Sunday morning, it looked like the Mansons had been here because of all the blood and everything. And the cops came out because he put his hands on me and they still didn't take him. So then I called. So when he was so bad and we couldn't wake him up, I called 911 again and they took him at like 4 o'clock in the morning on Monday. Now it's so bad that he's having seizures. And there were opiates and benzos and all this stuff in his system. And he's so far gone that I didn't do anything wrong. I'm going to be on pain medication for the rest of my life. The one thing they did for me is they put me on Ambetta. I don't know if you know what that is. Everyone here doesn't know what it is. But it's literally 24-hour morphine in like a Dexatrin type of capsule. But as soon as you either bust up the capsules or add water to it, it has something like Suboxone that nullifies the meds,
right.
You can't OD
right.
on it.
It's like a deterrent thing. All bad. I know you've had heart attacks and strokes and whatnot, and you're dealing with a lot. You've called about him. He is, you know, virtually dead from his condition. It's sort of remarkable he's not.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, he's 51.
Hang on.
51,
I think all
so.
You can do, there's sort of three options as I see it. And some combination of these three, you tell me, Mike, if you agree. One is you need to extract yourself from this situation.
Right.
Period.
Yeah.
You need to take care of yourself. You need to live through this. You need to extract yourself. And whatever that means, get out of there, number one. Number two, if you see him doing criminal actions, you can have him arrested. And I would do so to save his life. Number three, if he's of any sort of, or these doctors that have him at the hospital, he is a candidate, I am humbly, for replacement therapy, something like methadone or Suboxone, something that will never make him fully recovered, but will save his life.
Him from being this guy.
Yeah, prevent him from being this guy, exactly. And I would talk to his doctors about either methadone or Suboxone, Suboxone preferable, but he may have already failed that. I don't know. He may have been. My guess is a guy that's already been on that a few times and failed it.
And they were going to do an injunction to keep him in the hospital where he would have to either go to rehab, psych, or jail. And the main hospitalist wouldn't sign off on it. So I'm
Why
going
not?
To because he's home now. Because he said he's not getting in between marital issues. And then I tried to say, well, he can't come home. And the police are like, he lives there. He can come home. So,
yeah, you know, you need to not live there anymore.
Yeah. Bottom line.
I know.
Listen, tomorrow. I will not be shocked if we talk to you in a couple weeks, you know, somewhere down the road, you give us an update via email when you say he's dead. But it's really not that far from it that you're going to end up dead. He's going to be in a fugue state.
Right.
I've had sex with people and gone on dates where I didn't remember, and I woke up, and I'm not anywhere as far gone as this guy, and it would not be at all that crazy that he chokes you out or he turns you into the real Manson family situation in the middle of the day, and he has no idea what he's doing. He's going to wake up and go, I don't know, I didn't do it.
He's sleeping on the couch. I lock my door at night in the bedroom. I won't get in a car with him because he's suicidal. You know, he's tried to kill himself like 15 times in the past 4 years. But what I'm going to try to do tomorrow, which is the only thing that they said the last hope, is to go down to the courthouse and get an injunction. And if the judge approves that, as soon as he signs it, the sheriff will be here and they will take him either to rehab.
Good.
Or
if that doesn't work out, then we're gonna you got to get out of there. Period. End. That's it. Those are your priorities.
Even if it does, I don't know if she should be. I mean, like, find a temporary one of those pay by the month motels or something. Just get out.
Our women's shelter for domestic violence. They're always around like that. I mean, really,
that's a ticking time bomb.
He went to an extended stay when we were living still in Missouri. We just moved to Florida to take care of my mom, but we were in Branson, and I finally had enough, and he wasn't on a lease, so I kicked him out, and he went into extended stay, and that's when he started banging. And, I mean, it was horrible. He
all right, Kimberly, we get it. We get it. Listen, we got the picture. Believe me, it's a horror story from top to bottom. You got to take care of yourself. That's all you can take care of now. Do go good on you getting that injunction, but beyond that, Kimberly has to take care of Kimberly. That includes getting out of there, being safe, and dealing with your own opiate stuff. Thanks, Kimberly. That's all we can say right now. I appreciate you emailing us, and please do give us an update on how that goes down. This disease is so messed up.
If she had like a great singing voice, that'd be a great like backstory for America's Got Talent. Like they love that.
Oh, she would win.
They love that the story.
They would certainly tell the story, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
But
she couldn't win an ESPY though.
Why's that?
They're not like. Why's that?
It's a very very limited amount of people that got that.
Yeah, story. That's an inside joke I'd get.
Women will take from men. It's amazing what they'll live with, how long they'll stay with it, and they'll just continue to be supportive of that.
Yes, it's remarkable, isn't it?
I mean,
certain
what guys, Susan's saying is she would never put up with anything from me, let alone heroin.
Probably would though, because she's like a battered woman. I would stay because I'm the kind of person. But she just, and maybe because she was sick, she just feels like she's afraid to be alone. But it's just amazing that she put up with that abuse.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's so easy to say, how does she stay with that guy? Until you're in a similar situation,
right?
Like,
That's exactly right.
I always sit next to fat piles of shit watching UFC or boxing matches, and they're like, "Get up, pussy!" Yeah. And they're like, "Oh, how could he be tired? Just go!" I'm like, "You have no idea what you're talking about." You have and
until you walk,
it's the
shoes.
Same thing to watch like a battered woman and say, "Well, how did she stay?" Yeah. Until you've been faced with something that, like, a love that's so kind of unbreakable that even intense trauma, and sometimes it makes it even harder. Like the trauma, like connects
people,
you
people
more.
Get bound to the trauma. That's right. It's exactly right.
And they don't know anything different.
They don't know anything different. They're reenacting old traumas, reenacting new traumas, and they're feeling responsible. And they're in. You know, when you're in, you're in. It's hard to extract yourself from it.
Given what we were talking about with Bob, and I do not want to talk down or poor. I do not mean this as an insult in any way. I'm asking you as a doctor, genuinely curious.
Yeah.
Given what we were talking about with Bob, why does a lady who has a heart attack? Why is she going to be on pain medication her whole life? When she said that, I was like, why?
She's had some other stuff she wrote about in the email, some strokes and things like that. But even then, it's only going to make things worse.
Right. Like when she said that, I didn't want to interrupt because obviously her story was very intense.
I don't want to get into her stuff until she can extract herself from their stuff. You know what I mean? But her stuff, why did she have a heart attack at 40? Hmm. Guess what? I'm thinking there may be something going on there. So, right?
That could be genetic, though, right?
Could be, but whenever anybody has a heart attack, 40 or under, really, particularly under 30, I think substances.
They're not Jewish.
Definitely.
What?
Adam has this thing, definitely not a Jew. So, I don't know. Well, how dare you? Once again, are you racist?
I'm
this racist in our house.
I'm Jewish.
That doesn't make it okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Didn't you learn that when you tried to talk in colleges?
I dated a black girl. I feel like I can say something about Jewish people. I'm sorry.
All right. I think that about does it for this show. Yes, everybody? We're good? Everybody? It's been intense. A lot of territory coming
today. Sorry. This was the intense show.
That's all right. It's all good.
But go to This Life Podcast on Twitter or drdrew.com. Find all the most recent podcasts that Drew has to offer and more. Hopefully, we're going to, beginning another one with Mike Catherwood called You Live.
You Live Pod. Well, that's coming.
We need the legitimate.
I told her that. Yeah. That's what I said too.
I'm sure we'll figure
it
out.
We'll get that.
Yes, bitch.
Coming soon. Coming soon, the You Live Podcast. And then remember the Integrity
Card.
Care Card. Integrity Care Card.
It's a great product, man.
I know, it's a good idea. God, Taylor, thank you for hanging out with us again. We appreciate
it. Thanks for letting me hang out. You guys have crazy...
Did we traumatize you?
No, I just... I feel like my problems are very different than other people's.
There you go. You must feel much, much better. Different. Not as important as other people, but different than other people.
Thank you. At Taylor Comedy on all social media outlets. And remember, you can see him at the Mustang Ranch twice a year.
No strip clubs.
Just perusing hookers, but won't go to strip clubs.
Just brothels. They said they've never had an STD, and I pushed it a little bit, and they're like, since 1978, no STDs.
Well, I bet that's true as far as stuff that the customers go home with, because I'm sure they mandate condoms.
Yeah, but there's like so many things you can get without condoms.
Not really stuff that their customers would know they got from there, though.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You wouldn't know till 6 months later.
I understand why. How do the customers not affect the girls is the weird part.
Condoms.
But they could have like a little like molluscum contagiosum, you know,
a little something.
Yeah, that's not STD.
Taylor knows what molluscum
I'm
is.
Sure girls get educated. I'm sure girls get like the flu all the time, like a preschool teacher. I'm sure they're getting sick, but I buy it that they don't have STDs because I'm sure
they're careful.
I bet
about
you
it,
that
sure.
place is like extreme mandatory. Yeah. You wear a condom, or we will kick you the F out.
Yep.
I've heard that with like an oral stuff, they use condoms.
That's even the oral sex. Yeah. Oh, that makes sense. That's how I was thinking about that. How do they avoid that?
They do that at the Bunny Ranch. I only know that from the reality show where the girls were talking about they have to blow them with a condom on. I would be.
But
like,
are the guys allowed to do oral?
What
sex?
Guy buys a hooker and goes down?
There's a menu. I'll send you a screenshot of the menu they get. There's no prices. That's how you know it's expensive.
I saw, you know, that they have one in Pompeii, Italy.
Oh yeah,
It was so well preserved by the ash of Mount Vesuvius. There's brothels, and there's just
the
like
wall.
Pictures of. It's like, do you want bent over? Do you want the oral? Yeah. And it's like pictures of people.
You point on the position. Yeah.
It's pretty rad, actually.
Well, you'll hear more of this on You Live podcast.
All right, yes, indeed. So that's a little taste of what's to come. Thank you all
if
for
you're
being
alive,
here.
You will live.
All right,
on this
and we'll see you next time.
Butterflies deep, overanalyze everything. Drop me like a fly to my knees. I figure it out, ta-da-da, ta-da-da. Think I'm gonna go. Town's crowd, lose control, drown it down now. I'll figure it out, da da da, da da da. Tell me it's real this time. This feeling that I'm feeling, that's right. Tell me it's real.
that I